This program is sponsored by Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Located at 185 Worcester Street, right on Route 9, they can be reached at 508-545-8105 or at wickedchronicvendorcommerce.com. Wicked Chronic is a boutique-style retail shop that focuses on selling counterculture products such as Wiccan, cannabis cultures coming together in a unique setting. You need something for that special spell? Go on down to Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts and speak to Beverly. Tell them Dr. Chris sent you. Check them out today. Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, fantasy genre. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
In tonight's episode, we are covering Friday the 13th, episodes
7 and 8.
7 and 8. I almost said 5 and 6. But 7 and 5 and 6 of the episodes I was barely on. Yes, episodes 7 and 8. And Mr. Seneca has the episode synopsis for us for the first one.
Okay, episode 7, Dr. Jack, which was originally aired on November 9th, 1987. Mickey, Ryan, and Jack track down a cursed scalpel that has found its way into the hands of a talented surgeon.
Who pretty much acts like the way we believe the serial killer Jack the Ripper would have been if they'd ever caught him. Because I think there was always speculation that he was possibly a surgeon just because of the way he killed his victims was so precise.
Yeah. And it's also mentioned in this episode that the scalpel may have actually belonged to Jack the Ripper, you know, which would put the body count a little bit higher for the scalpel and not necessarily part of the curse that the objects, you know, were bestowed upon in the hands of Uncle Lewis.
True, but if you didn't, if you owned an object like this, you wouldn't become Jack the Ripper because people own serial killer memorabilia all the time. So the curse of the devil probably made it, you know, it probably turned him into this type of individual.
I'd say possibly. Like, surgeons, much like lawyers, have a separation between their personal lives and their professional lives, you know, because they're dealing with, you know, people that, you know, the fates of which, if they cared too much for, it would just tear them apart inside. So doctors and nurses and whatnot have to have this kind of emotional separation from their patients because, you know, losing a patient is would be traumatic every single time if they didn't. So that kind of cold, distant, calculating vibe that the Dr. Howlett actually gets is creepy, yeah, also, but, you know, kind of within the within normal range for a surgeon. It's just he takes it to a little bit more creepy and extreme form because he's purposely killing people.
True. The doctor is walking down a dark alley before we know who it is. You know, he's all cloaked up. And he kills a man in the dark by slitting his throat, and then it's in kind of in full view of a lot of people. He's not the most, you know, hiding his identity kind of vigilante, because he does this in front of people, and then runs down until he gets to a gate, and then he uses the scalpel like a lightsaber at least more than once in this episode.
Yeah, like the scalpel has like the You pinpointed it right. Like, it has the ability to slice through steel and just cut through everything. Like, it's some sort of magical scalpel. Well, we know it's, you know, magical, but it's just amazing. It's going right through these iron bars at, like, they're butter. You know, he just kind of takes one swipe at the bottom, one swipe at the top, and pushes the gate in, and there you go. Kind of questioning thing is, like, this alleyway or this kind of side street has a lot of people on it for being nighttime, and the florist has no lights in his florist kiosk, so there's no way that you could really see the flowers that he's selling. and you know, convenient for the murderer. You know, if you want to kill someone, it's, you know, plenty room in that dark alley. But yeah, just in full view of everyone. Yet later on in the show, when he goes out to purposely find a victim, you know, he has trouble finding someone that's kind of separated by themselves. It didn't seem that he cared before.
And then we cut over after the commercial break to Jack explaining about the knife possibly belonging to Jack the Ripper, which we just mentioned. And Jack the Ripper was, of course, running around doing his thing in 1888 to 1891.
Otherwise known as the Whitechapel Murders.
Correct. He killed 5 prostitutes and was never caught. Now, there is a great Batman story by Mike Mignola, who was the creator of Hellboy, in the early 1990s, which is being made into an animated movie coming out this February called Batman Gotham by Gaslight, which explains that Jack the Ripper, after the Whitechapel murders, fled to America and was living in Gotham City and starting all over again.
Aha!
Yes. So, and Batman has also returned to Gotham City, or Bruce Wayne, excuse me, has just returned to Gotham City after being abroad and wanting to help clean up the streets of Gotham City in Victorian London. And he encounters Jack the Ripper. And in fact, the police possibly think that the new murderer is possibly Bruce Wayne because he's been gone so long, and they know about the tragic backstory of his parents being killed in Crime Alley. So Bruce Wayne actually gets arrested for the Jack the Ripper murders in Gotham for a few pages.
I mean, he does actually fit the profile, really.
Correct.
If you think about it.
But you get Jack the Ripper versus Batman in a Elseworlds story, which is basically taking familiar stories in the DC universe and giving them a slight twist, sometimes setting them in different time periods or sometimes just altering events so different things take place, like so on and so forth. But anyway, I just wanted to relate it to that. Also, there was, of course, you know, in terms of like Jack the Ripper media, before we go on too much of a tangent about this, probably the one more well-known and modern ones is probably From Hell, starring Johnny Depp and with Heather Graham playing one of the prostitutes who apparently died, but in the movie she doesn't, she lives on. It's based on the Alan Moore comic book.
I actually do really like that movie. I don't like their portrayal of how he drinks his absinthe, because I, you know, enjoy absinthe myself. But the movie and kind of the how the story unfolds, I really liked it. I thought it was a good adaptation.
Yeah. So they decide to go investigating the where the knife is. And one of the most bizarre scenes of all time is they find this, the guy who owns the knife store, played by, I believe it's Michael Copeman. Yeah, he plays Jim Bronson. Jim's Knives. What former convict is going to be allowed to open a knife store?
I don't know. You know, I guess it depends on the state, too. You know,
yeah.
Since we don't really know where the Friday the 13th series is taking place, it could be just one of those states with very, very lax laws on that type of thing. Like, oh, you a felon? You want to run a weapon shop? Sure, you know.
This guy is a bit part actor who's still working today. He was recently on the canceled Minority Report television series, which we may or may not ever cover one day, as well as one of my favorite series, Mutant X, which is a kind of mutant-style Marvel show without actually being in the Marvel Universe, as well as Highlander and its sequel, Highlander the Raven. Again, bit part actor, done many, many different things. When they're going through the knives, though, I'm reminded of this famous line right here.
There you go. And your wallet.
Nick, give him your wallet.
What for?
He's got a knife.
That's a knife. That's a knife.
From Crocodile Dundee, where Mick pulls out the giant knife.
Awesome. And talking about the scalpel for a minute, like the, you know, it's supposed to be an antique pearl-handled scalpel. But in fact, actual scalpels from that time didn't have that style blade on it. In the Friday the 13th series, it has almost a triangular blade, and scalpels from that era had the same type of shape as scalpels today, which is a slight curve that goes from the base of the entry of the blade from the handle, and it curves up into a slight curve, and that's actually to get proper cuts in where you need to get, because if you used a triangular blade, it would pierce rather than slice. And so the style of the scalpel that he used is not period significant at all, but it was very beautiful. It was a very beautiful tool.
The actor who plays the doctor, Dr. Vincent Howlett, who's this world-renowned surgeon, and he can perform any type of surgery on anybody, was in Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. Did you ever see that movie?
No.
Oh,
what's
it's
that
a,
about?
It's kind of like a hip-hop kind of samurai film. It's an African-American mafia hitman who models himself after a samurai, and the main character in it is played by Forrest Whitaker. And Cliff Gorman, who plays our villain in this episode, is one of the main characters in the movie. It's a very cool stylized movie, and this is before Forrest Whitaker's career really kind of exploded after he won the Academy Award.
Nice. Yeah, he's a brilliant, brilliant actor.
Unfortunately, he died in 2002 at the age of 65.
Yes.
But I didn't realize how old he was in this episode. But he's got a very kind of Herbert West attitude about him, I thought, from the Reanimator.
Oh, yeah. I mean, both of them were surgeons, you know? Reanimator was a surgeon.
Yeah,
same type of thing.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And he just has this very stuck-up kind of attitude about him. One thing I want to point out is when they're driving in the car, and I can't believe we've not pointed this out in other episodes yet. In 1988 or 1987, when this episode took place, seatbelts weren't a thing yet in vehicles.
I never realized that. I know they had to actually put laws in place to get car manufacturers to install seatbelts, you know, for the safety of people. But, yeah, I thought it was actually much, much earlier that seatbelts had to be in cars.
Yeah, I guess not. It must have not been until, like, the 1990s. And I'm not going to pinpoint exactly when, because that's not what the focus of the episode's about. I think there's a killer car episode at some point, too. So maybe we'll get to the laws of cars when we get there. Every show has a killer car episode, and I don't have every episode memorized, but I swear I know there's a vehicle episode coming up at some point.
I think there is.
There's a woman who the doctor killed her daughter, excuse me, beforehand, because I guess he's had the scalpel now for over a year or so.
Was it over a year? Because Jack actually mentioned, you know, one line in the show that said he's killed dozens of people. So he certainly could have killed dozens of people in a year, but that also implied that he was moving from hospital to hospital, location to location, so as not to be traceable to the murders.
True, true. I don't think we're going to add those dozen people to the body count unless you think it's really necessary, but we're talking about characters killed on the show itself.
Yeah.
So
not just the deaths caused by the item.
Correct. When we do our... We'll have a body count total in the next episode that we cover the shadow boxer. Ryan watches the doc. Ryan follows the doc. Tries to steal the knife from the doc, hides in the morgue. Jack and the doc fight. Unfortunately, Jack is injured, but the good thing, he's in a hospital. This is where I thought the pacing of the episode completely kind of slows down around Jack needing surgery, and oh my god, the only surgeon who can do it is the doctor, who's the villain! And I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, it definitely was very slow, because right when you get the fight, just before Dr. Howlett cuts the elevator cable that Jack is hanging on to, and Jack kind of plummets, that fight seemed almost like one of those end episode crescendos, and I had to look at my watch to see, like, wait a minute, you know, we still have, like, half the episode left.
Yeah, I just honestly thought the pacing of this episode was terrible at times, and this is really, really slows down when you're like, oh no, Jack is gonna die, and I hate plot lines in TV where that is actually a thing. It's different when it's the season finale, you know what I mean, to build tension,
yeah,
because contracts are under negotiation, and, you know, you don't know if you're gonna get renewed if you haven't gotten renewed yet, or many other reasons I could go into that you don't really need to, you know, hear about. But, like, a third or fourth episode into the show? Come on.
Yeah. And because it's such a major surgery that he'd have to have, like he plummeted at least, what, two stories? and fell on his back. So I would expect his injuries to be more advanced, like broken bones, fractured, you know, spinal column, you know, stuff like this. And the injury that he has is basically a, how they describe it, is a bubble in the one of the aortas leading and the veins leading to the heart, that it is a fatal injury unless Dr. Howlett can actually save him.
True. You know, one thing, because we're not going to spend that much time on this episode. I just really didn't like it. I wanted to point out was, if you go on our Facebook page, there's been several articles given to us by a listener of the show, which we want to thank, who came up with the articles we were looking for about the various coverage of Friday the 13th, the TV series, in media, such as like Starlog and TV Guide and stuff like that. And we're not going to read the articles on the air. You can definitely kind of go onto our Facebook page, and we'll continue posting pictures of the articles so you can read them. You just got to enhance the picture in order to read the articles. And I thought that was really cool.
We love our listeners, and every time they pass us stuff, we want to, you know, give them a shout-out. I believe that was Matt Ray.
Matt Ray, correct. Yeah, and we have a lot more
images.
We have a lot more pictures to point to post. Somebody did point out, though, that the TV Guide article listed as a two-hour movie, and I'm like, oh, yeah, it does say that. And I asked somebody, and he says, like, I do remember it actually being two episodes back-to-back, and they called it a movie. There was just no break in the middle of the two, except for a commercial. And I was like, oh, okay, that's still not really a movie, but I understand why she's questioning it. Well, that could have been a write-up.
I really don't think that the first two episodes fit very well together.
No, and I think that might have been just maybe a mistype. I honestly, my opinion is that it was a mistype by the person who wrote the article, or made this little thing, this little Dark Forces Take Control. Hold on, I'm going to enhance it because I can barely read it. Dark Forces Take Control as a new season begins, and this time they claim a victim. Now, this is the beginning of season 3, I think, because I think this is where they kill off Ryan.
Okay.
Spoiler alert for anybody listening.
It's a show from the 80s.
It's a show that's 30 years old, and we, by the way, mentioned that there's a Ryan leaves the show at some point. And it's a special two-hour premiere movie, so I'm also wondering maybe if season 3 was a two-hour episode.
No.
I'm also going to... I do love the fact that they have, like, the cast in the photo, and then above them they have their kind of silhouettes, and it's like, oh, there's Ryan, and then there's the new guy, Johnny. Anyway, just something I noticed that, you know, when I did read it after Sharon Welch Faldudo, who makes the comment on Facebook, had pointed that out. So the girl, sorry, the woman, the mother of the girl that the doctor killed acts like Sarah Connor in Terminator 2 and escapes from her restraints in a very interesting way.
She just kind of begs to have the straps on her wrists loosened because she's basically been committed, you know, since she pulled a gun on the doctor, and she's acting crazy. She's not really explaining herself very well. She's just kind of, I don't know, whiny, crying, and yelling at the same time. She seems crazy.
Correct.
So, you know, the orderly unstraps her wrist, and she's like, I promise I won't do anything. And, of course, what she do, you know, she takes a plant and knocks him over the head. You know, the orderly is down for the count.
And we get a little bit of backstory of Ryan talking about, like, his parents, you know, just never, like, you know, gave him any type of encouragement, and Jack was the first one ever thought he could do something important, and yes, the whole universe doesn't realize what they're doing is important, but it's very important what they're doing, because they're stopping, they're dealing with supernatural, mystical forces that only they are aware of, and anyone they encounter as well. And of course, then the doctor has another one of these moments. The doctor has a shocking death, or is like, I remember the scene where Oddjob, the guy who would throw his hat at James Bond, he gets the hat caught in the steel girders, and Bond, I think, electrocutes the whole thing, and he's like, shocking. Or no, he kicks the toaster into the bathtub and electrocutes a guy, and that's when Sean Connery says, shocking.
What I actually was more surprised about is, like, this crash cart is in an abandoned hallway of the hospital, and yet still has a charge.
That abandoned hospital, it's the same hospital, they're just in the basement, and it just looks like so much garbage. I mean, how bad can a hospital be run down in a major metropolitan city like that?
I don't know, man. Some of the hospitals here in Philly are not the best either. They might not have abandoned hospital wings, but, you know, the complaints about the Ravenbrook hospital that were mentioned was that they had bad press, malpractice, poor care, scandals, you know, and it's like if you run your hospital like that, you can believe that, you know, a wing of your entire hospital will be completely, you know, abandoned because you don't have enough staff, you don't have enough patients, you don't have enough money to run it all.
Now,
but yet this crash cart actually has a charge.
Now, is there an actual hospital called Ravenbrook?
I did not find one.
Okay, I wasn't able to find one either. Other than Ravenbrook Farms, not the
yes.
same thing, that was the only thing I could find about Ravenbrook, so...
Yeah.
That's pretty much it for this episode. I really didn't like this episode, and Elise, who we reference a lot and who's been on the show, doesn't like it either. If you read the back of the chapter covering this episode.
Yeah, she says it was never one of her favorite episodes. And as a kid, it just never hit the right chords. But as an adult, I can see why. The pacing is way off. We completely agree.
So only two people die in this episode, by the way, if you count the doctor too. Because most of the time, the people who are involved in the object actually live.
Yeah. There's the florist at the very beginning, and then there's mention of the daughter, and then mention of the dozens of people, but just the doctor and that one person actually to get killed on screen.
Correct. But we'll give the daughter an honorable mention because her mother went a little psycho trying to kill the doctor and avenge him. So three
yeah.
people die in the episode. Moving on to Shadow Boxer, Episode 8.
Shadow Boxer, Episode 8. Mickey and Ryan investigate the murder of a gym owner and realize that a mysterious pair of boxing gloves may be to blame. And this was originally aired November 21st,
1987. Because Rocky would have kicked that guy's ass.
He totally would have. And being that Rocky Balboa was, tipped place here in Philadelphia.
Yes, that's why I played that music for you, because
yeah,
you are the
yeah.
home of the Italian Stallion.
Oh my God, that's kind of ridiculous. But okay, here in Philadelphia, there is a statue of Rocky.
Yeah, there is.
Next to the Philadelphia Art Museum, and you can see tourists constantly having their picture taken with it.
Oh, like, that's awesome.
It's kind of a level of ridiculousness.
Have you run
yeah.
the stairs of the library, Mr. Zetica?
It's super easy.
Oh, okay.
It's super easy. They in the movie, they make it seem like, you know, this is some big accomplishment, but man.
But I'm literally looking forward to next year's sequel to Creed 2, where Creed Apollo Creed Jr. is going to fight Ivan Drago, the Russian.
Wasn't that movie already like Rocky 2?
That was Rocky
3?
4, and Rocky and 4. In it, Ivan Drago, a.k.a. Dolph Lundgren, kills
mm-hmm.
Apollo Creed. Now, his son, Apollo Creed 2, played by Michael B. Jordan, is going to be fighting him to avenge his father.
This is turning into so much like a soap opera. I don't know how I feel about this.
I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, Creed was really good. A lot of people thought Creed was really, really good. And Sylvester Stallone was nominated for an Academy Award for playing the same character again.
No, I agree. It was a very good movie. It was a very good movie. But, you know, we're getting into boxing storylines that are sounding a lot more like wrestling storylines. Yeah.
That was Rocky III, where he fights Hulk Hogan.
Yeah. There's some of those that I just kind of block out.
Now, what's funny is that the trainer in this episode who's training the evil boxer, the bad guy of the episode who's got the cursed gloves, reminds
Tommy
me
Dunn.
Excuse me?
Tommy Dunn, the bad
yes,
guy.
Yes, yes. He reminds me a lot of Burgess Meredith going back to Rocky. You'll be nothing! You're a punk!
Yep.
Rat.
And this boxing gym is, like, entirely too small for the number of boxers training, but it's one of those, like, hole-in-the-wall, this guy Manny must have been some hot shot back in the day, and he opened up his new gym, and this gym has been running for, like, 20 years, and he still has, like, iron-on patch lettering on his sweatshirts. He can't even get something logoed, you know. It, very, very... bottom of the barrel, hole in the wall type of gyms. And they do actually have those here in Philadelphia.
And do you,
it's a kind of a popular thing here.
And do you know, by the way, who this actor would go on to play?
No, what?
Detective Dolly in the Boondock Saints and Boondock Saints 2.
Really? Okay, well, that makes sense. I have not seen Boondock Saints 2. I like Boondock Saints, but I have not seen 2.
Yeah, you know, you can go through life without having seen it. It's all right. It's heavily compared to the first one because it's like, what? They made a sequel? But, you know, it's okay. But I just wanted to point that out, that he plays a very significant character in a very, very popular movie.
You know the best character out of this entire episode? Kid Cornelius. Boxer Kid Cornelius, played by Philip Aiken.
But what's funny is that right after he was in this episode, he did a small part as a telephone installer into the apartment of three men living together, Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, and Ted Danson. What movie were they in?
Three Men and a Little Baby?
Yes, Three Men and a Baby.
And a Little Lady a little later?
Yes, Three Men and a Baby. He was a telephone installer in that movie. That's why I was like watching this and going, God, he looks familiar. And then I realized, oh, I just watched 3 Men and a Baby last week because I haven't seen it in like almost like 20 years or something. I was just like, oh, I got to watch this because I loved this movie. So he plays a telephone installer in that. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, he is, out of the entire episode, the gem of the entire episode. Like, he defends Mickey when she's getting kind of hit on by these sleazy boxers and sleazy Tommy himself. And he's just kind of a stand-up guy. Like, he doesn't hit on her. He just defends her and says, hey, if you got any trouble, let me know. And everything he does in this episode is very upstanding. Like, he takes over the gym at the very end of the episode to honor Manny, and Manny was kind of like a father figure to him, and he defends Manny's memory and his honor by fighting Tommy, who he heard and also believes that Tommy killed Manny, and, like, I just loved him.
I went on a tangent earlier, and I was going to mention the DVD releases of Friday the 13th, and we'll just stick to season one for now. But if you look at the DVD covers, the individual releases, not the box set, which has like a black and white Satan on the cover, the skull on the cover is made up of all the artifacts from the episode, from the season.
I noticed.
Yes.
I noticed, yeah.
Because you can see the boxing gloves make up the cheekbones of the skull.
Cool, yeah. also, like, boxing gloves and mystical boxing gloves have kind of popped up in different media as like, a thing.
Yeah.
So, like, in Rick and Morty, it's mentioned in the episode where, you know, they have, like, Friday the 13th, the series, is mentioned. And the antique store that the devil runs, you know, has these boxing gloves, and Rick kind of takes the curse off of them.
I heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good episode. I highly recommend Rick and Morty if you haven't seen it. But
I have not seen it, actually. I've never watched an episode of Rick and Morty, but it's something I've been meaning to, and it's not like, it's not on my list of priorities to, like, get to, you know, like...
Man, I'm going to have to take your geek card away.
I'm sorry. I spent the weekend doing very geeky things at the Kirk
you
Hammett...
Did.
I was at the Kirk Hammett Horror Collection in Salem, Massachusetts, a collection of movie posters owned by Kirk Hammett, lead guitarist of Metallica, and me and my girlfriend binge-watched the first 4 episodes of The Punisher.
Yeah, so I mean, I can't really take your geek card away because you did have a geeky weekend.
Which, speaking of The Punisher, by the way, The Punisher movie starring Dolph Lundgren actually came out around the time of the Friday the 13th TV series.
Yes, I remember that one.
Yeah.
I actually thought it was pretty decent.
Oh, yeah, I think that movie incredibly holds up. Even just the biggest problem people have with it is that he doesn't have the skull on his chest ever, because that would be too much like a comic book, and they wanted to make it realistic. Nowadays, Hollywood can't get a comic book movie in theaters fast enough.
They're buying up properties left and right.
Yeah. By the way, the big one this weekend was Justice League. Actually underperformed at the box office compared to Thor Ragnarok.
Thor Ragnarok was a quality film.
Because Justice it was directed League... by the guy who directed What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah. I have to see Justice League in the theaters because I have to see Justice League in the theaters. But all my friends have seen it, and the reports from them are like, CG just not fitting in with the look of the film.
No, Superman's cape is way too CG. Oh, spoiler alert, Superman Returns from the Dead. Yeah, his cape is a little bit too heavy on the CG. Which, when you watch Supergirl, the TV series currently on, her cape is never CG, and neither is Superman's when he shows up on his cousin's show. Yeah, they're real capes on those shows, people, not CGI. Batman and Superman's capes a lot of times in these DCEU movies are CGI. You know what's never CGI too much? Friday the 13th, the TV series, except for the shadow in the episode is... You know, there's
Shadow Boxer.
Yeah, they don't explain, like, in... like, Elise's book doesn't explain how the shadow effect is done, and I couldn't find anything about it, but it's gotta be, like, they shot those scenes and then just put them into the frame of the episode.
Well, it looked like to me that it was actually computer-generated or computer-enhanced, because when you actually have an actual shadow, there needs to be a light source for that shadow to shine upon. And it distorts based on where the light is and based on the topography of the shadow actually hitting whatever it is hitting. So to get the clear visage of the boxer in the positions that he's in, it was kind of impossible to do unless there was some sort of computer graphics enhancement.
Now, I do like the fact that they mentioned Lloyd once again. I think his episode of him breaking up with Mickey is coming up very soon.
Yeah, there's a image of a picture of him next to her bed, and mentioned that are you still engaged to that guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Now, they also mentioned the History of Boxing Museum, which, from what I could find online, it does actually exist, and there is a boxing museum. It's part of the American Sports University in San Bernardino, California.
Cool. I have not heard of it, nor have I been there, even though I do enjoy boxing.
The only amount of boxing I've ever been interested in has been the Rocky films. I have never witnessed a real-life boxing match in my life, and it's just not something I've ever been into. Neither is wrestling.
You know, professional boxing is not really what I'm into. I'm actually into the doing of boxing.
Oh, you like to box?
I do like to box, and I have gloves, and I've got practice mitts, and wraps, and the whole shebang.
Not in your present condition, of course.
No, I'm present. But whenever I box with someone, whenever I spar with someone, there's a rule. No head hits, you know, because the concussion rate for boxers is fantastically high, and my nose, I'm terribly afraid of it getting broken. So I don't hit anyone's head, they don't hit me, but body blows, perfect. I can take a hit, and I can give them quite well. Mistress here, so I can give them quite well. So one of the things that I was really analyzing as I was watching this episode is the form, you know, boxing form that they are using. Sometimes they're actually able to get a smidgen of good form, like you're supposed to have your elbows tucked, hands up towards your face because you're supposed to protect your face. But on television, if you protect your face in the way that you're supposed to, the camera can't really see you. And so they kind of fudge it a little bit on that. But Tommy himself, absolutely horrible form in any sense of the word.
Oh, yeah, that was not a well... I think a matter of, like, the budget. They were just not able to hire a proper trainer to train actors how to box correctly just for a few scenes here and there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just might not have been in his in their budget for the show. I'd love to know what the budget on the show was per episode, because IMDb doesn't really state it, and neither does Elise's book. So maybe something for us to look into, but I can't imagine it was anywhere near the budget of Game of Thrones.
Oh my God, no. You know, we're talking 1980s television, you know, maybe 10,000 per episode, I'm not sure, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, the Friday the 13th franchise had only made about $10 million. No, that's not true. The Friday the 13th franchise had made more than $10 million in the theaters, but it did not translate over to a syndicated TV series that too much. When Ryan and Jack sneak into the apartment while he's on his date with Mickey, getting all handsy, by the way.
Oh, my God.
Creeper. And he discovers them. Is his walls just made of wallpaper that looks like bricks? Because he puts his fist through a brick wall. Because it looks like he's living in a shitty apartment where he's hiding the gloves in the wall because he moved some bricks out of place to get to the gloves. And then he puts his fist into a wall.
I think that's just supposed to illustrate that he's actually strong no matter whether he had the gloves on or not, or that the gloves made him super strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's really unclear. The boxing shadow creature reminded me a lot of, like, like Dark Link, you fight your shadow self. But we find out, of course, that, as usual with creatures like this, light defeats anything.
Yeah, you know, it's a shadow. So if you shine a bright light at it, it ceases to be a shadow.
Correct. When they go to get the pictures developed, Ryan makes a mention that he had to give up a copy of his only copy of Green Lantern number 3. I asked somebody who is a little bit more of a Green Lantern fan than me. I'm a casual reader, mostly of the more newer stuff from Kyle Rayner, who replaced Hal Jordan, to the current Green Lantern run. And there is no significance about Green Lantern number 3. Now, at this point, when this episode aired, there had only been 2 Green Lantern number 3s. There are currently now 5 different Green Lanterns issue number 3 because they the amount of times they have restarted Green Lantern. Mm-hmm. Neither one of the issues in question from the Golden Age or the Silver Age had anything significant in it happening for there to be him to have to give this up. Now, if he said Green Lantern number 1, maybe, but not number 3. 3 doesn't have anything happen. I think
maybe
it was
that was just a personal preference of his.
Maybe. Possibly. I don't know. But again, it was probably just a throw in there, a line to the scriptwriters writing something and just said Green Lantern number 3.
Yeah. So we've got the boxing gloves themselves were originally Killer Ken Kelsey's boxing gloves.
I wonder if there's ever a guy named Killer Ken Kelsey in real life boxing. Or how many boxers have been named Killer?
Well, I mean, Killer is a great name for a dog, you know? I don't know. I'm taking a short Google of that.
Yeah, there was a boxer who lived from 1909 to 1959. He was an American boxer, and he had a reputation for being a killer in the ring named May Bear.
Interesting.
Which, by the way, was the... I believe that May Bear was the name of the boxer that the Cinderella Man knocks out in the movie Cinderella Man.
Oh, I hadn't seen that one.
Yeah, the one that stars
award-winning actress.
No, Jennifer Connelly's in it. No, is she? No, Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe.
Yes, that's him.
Yes, Russell Crowe is in that movie. Again, the only thing I know about boxing is watching films about boxers like the one based about our boxer here in Massachusetts, played by Mark Wahlberg.
You know, one of the things that I detest about our villain, and I guess it made me hate him more, was that the guy Tommy spits a lot.
Yeah.
He freaking spits inside the boxing studio and spits on the street and almost spits on Mickey. It's like, dude, that's fucking disgusting.
Yeah. Is that like one of your top 10 fetishes that you won't perform with somebody who asks?
Oh, no, I'll spit on people.
Oh, okay, I just wasn't sure. The way you were saying it, I was like, oh, maybe she has limits.
No, I don't like people spitting around me when we're in casual, like, non-fetish situations.
Oh, okay, you know, yes, of course.
If you want me to spit on you, I can certainly spit on you. I'll drink some milk so I have enough.
Oh, milk. God. Okay, now I'm getting terrible. Sick. The light breaks...
A gross habit.
The light breaks the spell. The villain is KO'd by the other boxer, and nobody notices Ryan taking the gloves off of him. I mean, they kind of do because he eventually breaks into the Curious Goods to steal the gloves back, but nobody goes, hey, that guy's stealing his gloves.
Yeah, no, but Ryan does this really cool little flip to get into the ring. I was kind of impressed with that. You know, when Tommy goes down after fighting Kid Cornelius because Jack and Mickey are using light to defeat the shadow boxer demon person thing, and you know, Tommy goes down, Ryan does a flip into the ring, steals the gloves really quick, and dashes off. And everything is so focused on Kid Cornelius that no one seems to bat an eye about it.
Wait, I thought that was Tommy Terrific.
No, Tommy Terrific was dead.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, Tommy Terrific was dead because Tommy had actually fought and did not kill someone in the ring. Yeah, so he basically died in the parking lot outside the...
That's right. Okay, I got my boxes of characters confused. Nicholas Pasco, by the way, who played Tony Terrific, he was also in the Boondock Saints.
Oh, I didn't even recognize him. I need to see that movie again. That was such a good movie.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of people from the Boondock Saints. Nicholas Pasco was also in Mutant X. There was a lot of people that carried over Mutant X, but syndicated TV actors tend to stick with syndicated TV actors. In projects, you know what I mean? Mr. Zeneca.
Sorry.
Okay. The one thing I thought was really funny is that Patricia Hamilton, who plays the wife of the deceased victim, was an Anna of Green Gables from 1985 to 1997.
She was. She was so sweet in that.
That was a ton of stuff I have never watched and never had any desire to. But I want to point out, she was also in My Bloody Valentine as Mabel.
Cool.
Oh, because we're coming up on Thanksgiving. When this episode airs, it'll be the day after Thanksgiving, by the way. She was in a TV movie called The Thanksgiving Treasure. I just wanted to point that in there because, again, we will be airing... This episode will be online the day after Thanksgiving. No other reason to mention it, just because. And then the next time we record, of course, we will be right into the Christmas holiday season on December 3rd.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Mickey, by the way, I got to point out, so the episode looks like it's about to end, but we still have some time left because our villain returns. Mickey is really upset over two people that she never met who died. There have been over a dozen people who have been killed off on this show so far.
It was a little odd that like she was so upset over it.
Like, oh, get over it. You didn't care about the other victims.
You know, I think she slightly cared about the homeless people that were being killed, but yet the person that perpetrated the murders died. You know, and I think she's just so upset that this guy was going to get away with it.
Yeah, there's...
And then she's assaulted in her bed.
Yeah, that was... That was interesting. I didn't know where they were going to go with that for a second there. But he wants the gloves. He's not interested in her. He's just going to take her as a victim because she's the woman. And why
me along like you liked me. Ugh.
Yeah, and Mr. Zeneca, why would she be taken hostage? It starts with a P.
He's a predator?
No, but what do we call this when the woman is the one taken hostage and not like Jack or Ryan? It's because of the patriarchy!
Yeah. Well, you know, she's... Women are kind of seen as the weaker sex, and therefore men want to sweep in and save. So taking the woman would actually get the two guys to comply with his orders and all of that. You know, it's kind of a trope. But.
True. And then Ryan has to put on the gloves and he almost kills Jack, and then at the end of the episode they have their dope-da-dope-da-dope kind of moment when Jack makes a very sarcastic threat to Ryan.
Now, if they would have done these two episodes in an opposite, like if Shadow Boxer was number 7 and Dr. Jack was actually number 8, I would have been a lot more okay with it. But Ryan just said in the previous episode that he considers Jack like, you know, a very important person in his life, and Jack just got out of major surgery to heal up the damage that has been caused from that fall, and then Ryan is punching the guy? So that, it's like, dude, he's still probably healing from that. Don't do that. This is like, you know, aired 1 week later. Like, don't do that.
I don't really think they probably thought about that type of continuity, because Jack was not hobbling around or acting like he was still recovering from surgery like most people would, and doing any type of extenuating thing. Like, don't forget, he got pushed around in the apartment by the killer, And he didn't, like, make a mention of, oh, my God, I almost split open my stitches, or, ooh, I'm still recovering from the surgery I had, or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but since they don't actually mention timelines, they don't say how long it's been since the last object they found, they never mention anything relating to time. It's just like, oh, everyone's healed, everyone's better, and to me, I just, maybe because I'm seeing these so close back-to-back as we do, it was went from Jack being completely sick and completely ill and in a wheelchair at the end of the episode to being punched in the gut by Ryan. And it's like, it made me cringe. I guess if you're seeing it a week apart or so, then it wouldn't get you as much.
Yeah, no. I just think it's just a matter of, like, we didn't really worry about continuity as much in television shows like this until maybe until The X-Files came along. Because even shows like Star Trek The Next Generation, which was airing just before this, you know, the same night at most stations, they were back-to-back by Paramount, didn't have continuity from episode to episode until something significantly big was going to happen, like with the Borg or Q or whatever, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until I felt like Friday the the X-Files that they really started focusing on continuity.
Yeah, perhaps. I'm not sure. Yeah. I care about it, but I am also a modern TV watcher.
I don't know.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually talked about the MacGuffins of both episodes, really.
Yeah, I don't own any boxing gloves and I don't own a surgical scalpel. Go.
Well, as I said, I do own boxing gloves.
Oh, good.
I own boxing gloves and I own sparring gloves, you know, like kickboxing gloves. And as for a vintage scalpel, I do not have a vintage scalpel, but I used to have vintage medical equipment that was a syringe. And I had a small metal box that it came in, kind of similar to the box that the scalpel is shown in the episode. You know, his box is kind of a leathery velvet. Mine was a stainless steel box, but about the same type of shape and style. And it was a vintage syringe that was meant for injecting medications. And I got it from another vintage antique store, kind of like Curious Goods.
Now, did you have a chance yet? I had mentioned this to Elise, I think the first time she came on, to pick up the soundtrack to the show, because it's out on CD and on vinyl now.
I did not pick up the soundtrack. I heard little snippets online, but I have not actually purchased it yet.
I think it's like $20 on vinyl and $10 on CD.
Yeah, it's totally affordable. I just haven't done it.
Yeah, totally worth picking up. I think the music in every episode is fantastic. I don't think it has every track on there from every episode. I think it's only like 20 or 25 tracks, but it is a recommendation to pick up, as well as, by the way, Roby's own CDs and her own music that you can find on iTunes, because she is a accomplished musician.
Yeah, was the body count for this, do you consider this episode 3 in body count? Or do you consider it 2? Because the Killer Ken Kelsey actually killed someone in the ring with the boxing gloves, but that was not shown on screen.
Then 2.
2? Okay. Alright.
Yeah. 2 per episode. So this is he kills the guy, the old man, and then later on...
Terrific Tony.
Yes.
Yeah, Manny and Terrific Tony.
Correct. He himself lives. He gets arrested.
Yes. For assaulting Mickey and basically causing his own demise because he had already gotten away with the murders. Yeah. All right. That's all the notes I have.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I have. These two episodes were, I mean, Shadow Boxer was a little better than the previous one, but not by much.
I kind of like this one a little bit better, you know, because it had a little bit more of the plot going on.
Correct.
And it was very unexpected to see Tommy at the very end of the episode assaulting Mickey in her bed.
Yeah, that was a little weird, but and a little...
It was weird. I don't really know how he would track her down.
Well, don't
she
forget.
She never said where she was from.
No, but they might have mentioned that. Don't forget, he was. Let me start over. The old man, his wife, had all that stuff, and they and he probably knew that they had come from an antique store to buy up all that old boxing stuff.
Quite possible.
Yeah, that could be like how he knows, and there might be only one antique store in the town. I mean, Framingham only has a couple. Natick next door to me only has like, you know, maybe has three, but still, you know, their antique stores are, you know, kind of niche to certain towns. Certain towns don't have any.
Yeah. I don't know. No, but boxers aren't really known for being smart because of all those concussions.
Yeah, they do. And he definitely was not striking himself as being like a brainiac.
No, he's no Nobel Prize winner.
No. Don't forget, as we mentioned, we do have a Facebook page where you can make posts, send us messages and such. Rate the Dead TV Podcast. And then you can also find us on our individual Twitters at ChrisDSAV.
And at ElegantlyKinky.
And don't forget, we also have a Patreon, and you can become a sponsor of the Dead TV Podcast as well. If you go to Radio Horror on Patreon, or if you own a business of some kind, including on the internet, you will have an episode or two dedicated to you for the Dead TV Podcast here on the Radio Horror Network. You can just send us a message at thatradioofhorror@gmail.com. And the Dead TV Podcast airs every other week, so look for the next episode in 2 weeks. Thank you for joining me once again, Mr. Zeneca.
Thank you again.
Everyone, have a good evening.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving. Happy holidays and such. Happy Black Friday, actually. Technically, since it's airing, it's actually Black Friday now.
All right. Have fun shopping, everyone.
Yeah. Go out and buy Friday the 13th on DVD. It's out there.